I want to thank our sponsor, Abbey Connect. Impress callers, save time, and grow your business with a dedicated receptionist team from Abbey Connect. Visit abbeyconnect.com/MikeM for more information. That's abbeyconnect.com/MikeM.
And so it's something that I've tried to be better about in recent times, is to actually put some calendar time, quarterly or so, to look back and say, okay, what's worked well this quarter? What's not working well? What can I change? And I think it's been a major shift in my business since I started being more mindful of making time for that kind of reflection.
So to kick off this episode, I want to say hi to you guys, but I'm going to use your initials of J-A-K. So if I say, hey, Jack, that's the three of you collectively.
Oh,
it's just
okay.
Shorter.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just shorter.
So hey, streamline.
Jack.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey,
Jack. The A guy, the A guy. Hey, I said, hey, Jack. And at least Amy goes, hey.
I say, hey, M.
Yeah, M. Jack. Jack him.
Jack him.
No.
Nope. So on this.
Like, nope.
I don't like it.
Wait, why do you do that, Kel?
I can't help it. I don't know.
If you were in the forest doing your fairy work, weirdo, and then like some bear comes up to you to attack you, is that what you do?
That's how I scare him off. No, I sing to him.
Oh. Well, that works.
It'd be great.
It does work.
A good plot for a TV show would be like, so it's a zombie apocalypse and Kelsey's like, you know, one of the few survivors and you have to go with her everywhere. And then everywhere you go, she just goes, and then the zombies start to attack and you're always constantly outrunning the zombies because of her noises.
Yeah. She's the great. I like that.
That's my superpower.
Yeah.
So I interviewed Melanie Diesel. She owns Story Fuel. Really fascinating perspective on the power of story. And sinfully, I think a lot of small businesses miss on this opportunity. Maybe Melanie will inspire us to actually use story in promoting our business. Listen in. So I want to start off end of 2016, right? So it's end of 2016 and you lose all your clients and not due to your fault.
No. I didn't do anything. It was one of those situations where I had several long-term clients. You know, I had a really good consulting relationship with them. Some of these relationships were years old. And it was just like, I feel like the stars aligning sounds like a good thing. So I don't know what the negative version
of stars
aligning.
Yeah, what would be the negative of that?
I don't know. Asteroids aligning.
I like that. The asteroids aligning and colliding in our face.
Exactly. So it was... One, my point of contact had been laid off and the person put in their place was completely changing everything. So that meant I was no longer working with the team.
Yeah.
Another client, they had restructured the business. And so the department I was working with was eliminated. Another one, they just happened to lose their budget. And so they weren't taking on any more consulting projects for the coming year. And I just went from, you know, best year of my life to I don't know what I'm gonna do next week.
But why was it the best year of your life? Were you with most revenue or what?
Yeah. From a business standpoint, you know, I had all these like, you know, I mean, the recurring revenue is the best revenue, right? You can predict it, you know, it's coming. And so I had these wonderful long-term client relationships and then all of a sudden I had nothing. And I was pretty much at capacity at that point. So I hadn't been admittedly doing a ton of business development to backfill those spaces. So it was not a fun time. And this was also the first week of December. And I think a lot of us know, you know, unless you're in a business that thrives on holiday giving, of which consulting is not, as far as I'm aware, you know, those last few weeks of December are not a great time to be trying to scrape together completely.
Yeah.
There's nothing to do.
Well, you know, what was the business exactly? What were you doing in 2016?
So at the time I was just starting up what is now StoryFuel, the consulting and education firm that I work with. You know, it was in a totally different form at that time, admittedly. A lot of our clients were publishers, whereas now we work primarily with marketers, you know, with corporations. At the time we were helping publishers, you know, magazines, newspapers, et cetera, start their own branded content teams that would service corporations that we now work with. So we've sort of cut out the middleman and we work directly with brands now.
Okay. So you were doing that, publishers all by asteroids colliding, go away.
Yeah.
So 2017 is really a restart for StoryFuel.
It was, yeah, it was a big restart. And I mean, I think looking back, I'm glad that it happened. I didn't feel that way at the time, but it was definitely a good period of time for me to really reflect and think about, okay, well, who are the clients I've most loved working with? Who have been the people who have gained the most from our work together? You know, what has really been the work that's, you know, made me light up, that made me happy? And I think that's how I kind of came to realize that working directly with the brands is where I felt like we could make a lot of impact, you know, that those are the folks who were able to take action. You know, they were able to make a difference in their business. And so that's kind of where we started to focus attention more so.
How come for entrepreneurs, it may, I guess it's true for all people. How come reflection is like, oh, that was really helpful in the moment. Like, oh, this is a shitstorm. Like what, why is that for you?
Yeah. I don't know why it is for everyone else. I know why it is for me, at least, is I tend to be a very process-oriented person. I'm type A, like I'm a to-do list organizer. So I'm always focused on what's happening next. You know, I've got a list, I've got a prioritization, things are organized, there's a timeline. And so unless I schedule it, I'm not going to be doing a lot of reflecting because I'm already sort of, what's the next task? What's the next project? What's the next event? The next client? And so it's something that I've tried to be better about in recent times, is to actually put some calendar time quarterly or so to look back and say, okay, what's worked well this quarter? What's not working well? What can I change? I think it's been a major shift in my business since I started being more mindful of making time for that kind of reflection, because it's so easy to get stuck in a rut of stuff that's not working or slowly draining the life out of you. And it's made a big difference for me to kind of have intentional time once a quarter to just take a step, take a beat, and see what feels right and what doesn't.
What was draining the life out of you? Anything in particular?
I mean, haven't we all had a client that drained the life out of us?
Oh, F yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about your worst client. Like, what was your worst client ever? You don't have to say any names, but what's her name? What's her
I mean, thank God I'm under NDA, right? We can't.
Totally NDA. We're not recording a thing. Yeah. What's her name? What's her name? Yeah, what happened?
It's, you know, I think for me, I'm very impact driven. It's part of why I love what I do, is that ability to really teach people things and watch that turn into confidence and action really quickly. And I had a client that sounded like they were one of those clients, but they were really, we need to check the box so it looks like we care about this kind of client. And so it was just heartbreaking and soul wrenching for me to be putting everything into it and trying to teach and doing exercises. And, you know, I was like really putting my all into it. And it just became clear very quickly that they didn't actually care. And they just needed to be able to say that these training sessions had happened. They just needed to, you know, give the appearance that they were caring about this. And that for me, I mean, showing up, knowing that no one cares and still wanting to deliver, it's like, oh, that was the worst. And it was
did you continue through that, Melanie? Or did you say we got cut bait, or how do you handle it?
I mean, we did. And this was one of the lessons I learned, is I need to vet better. But we had signed a longer term contract. It was several months of recurring sessions. What I did do was try to see, I then started to view it as a place for me to try out new things. You know, if it's not as valuable to them as is necessary, you know, as it should be, then this is a time for me to try things and see if I can shake them up a little bit, try to, you know, undo what I would normally do and see if it makes any sort of impact. So it was still valuable for me. And I think almost like comics learn a lot from, you know, bad stand-up audiences. Yeah. It's a test of your mettle, I think, to have an unwilling and unaccepting audience as a facilitator or a speaker, for sure.
Well, what about the draw for money? And I'll give you some context. So I had a client once, first name was Carol. Carol was a dick. And just when the defining moment was, her company was buying some software from us, and one of the other people on the phone, and Carol starts reaming out this person on the phone, like rude, insulting. And I'm like, what are we doing? How we escaped from that was we actually jacked up the price on the software to make it inaccessible. But that was the first time I ever declined an opportunity, because it was substantial financially. I'm grateful I did.
Yeah.
But the allure of money, have you ever been in a situation where the allure of money is so attractive?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think especially early on, I think when I first left my full-time job, because before I finally left and started my own thing, I was working at Time Incorporated. So I was the director of creative strategy over 35 magazines. I mean, I had a lot of teams that I was coordinating with and working on these massive multi-million-dollar content programs.
Yeah.
And so to take that with my own office and then jump out and kind of put up my own shingle, it was definitely a culture shock in terms of like the lifestyle that I could lead in one versus the other, right? Like that startup world. So, I mean, in those days, I definitely took on early on some clients that were like just left of my sweet spot where ran somebody's, you know, somebody's Instagram for a while, which is like not the kind of work that I would typically do, but it was work, you know. A couple other similar projects of like a friend needs some help with this vaguely communications related project. Are you interested? And I was like,
it's all sleeping floors, right?
Yeah. Let me look at my spreadsheet. Yes, I'm interested in that project.
Yeah. But back then you got to do it. You got to put food on the table, I presume.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's a certain point where you have to be integral to the business's continuity over when was that threshold for you?
I don't know. I mean, I think it changes. Okay. You know, I think the reality we're in right now for everyone who's in like COVID times, right?
Yeah.
My thresholds are all different than they would have been.
That's a good point.
A year ago, you know? Yeah. So I think it's tough, truthfully, for me to say where that bar is right now. I think I'm probably truthfully back in a position of doing probably not those same kind of projects, but similarly slightly left of center in terms of where I would normally focus my attention, because I think we're all sort of left of center in what we need at the point right now anyway. So
yeah. So what determines if you go left of center? Is it because I don't have enough money coming in to put food on the table, or I don't feel comfortable financially? Like what, there's gotta be some kind of trigger.
It's a good question. So we're very blessed and privileged. We're not in a position where we're having to make decisions at this point, you know, based on next week's grocery budget. That's luckily not the situation we're in. Very, very blessed and happy about that. I think a lot of it comes from a feast or famine mindset. I think right now everything feels urgent and important because everything is on fire. And so I'm probably a little more likely to compromise or question like, I wouldn't normally do that, but maybe it's worth it because of this situation. Who knows what's going to come? You know, I think it's uncertainty that makes me kind of, you know, question that a little bit. But I will say we have a young daughter at home. So we had a baby girl last August. She's almost a year old. And so, you know, even though the last few months have been chaotic and abnormal, I will say that having her at home has also made it much easier for me to decide which gigs that are worth traveling to are worth it. Obviously, again, with COVID, you know, things are not as timely in terms of travel right now. But there was a time where, man, I would, if I thought the work was going to be impactful and I was going to have fun and it was a city I wanted to go to, man, I would hop on a plane and go do a gig for $1,000, you know?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
You know, like if it was worth it. And now it's like, is that worth being away from my daughter and not being able to tuck her in at night and not being able to have dinner with my husband and not being able to, you know, take her to daycare and put her hair in pigtails? Like, I don't know. Those things matter. You know, being home is more important now. And so that threshold actually was brought a lot higher when she was born. For
That's
sure.
Interesting. So your husband before this and before your daughter was born, it sounds like you're traveling like a banshee.
Oh yeah. I was on the road 100+ days a year.
Okay. So how does that affect a marriage and a relationship? How do you manage that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, truthfully, I think the luckiest thing for me in the world is that my husband was actually an entrepreneur before I was. And so he understands it. He gets it. We balance one another very well. He's an entrepreneur in the sports space. He comes from more of like a finance and, you know, business background, and I'm more on the creative side. And so it works out really well in that we can balance one another. I help him with their creative and marketing and communications. You know, he can help my business with our projections. And so he saw the need for it. And he got to come with, you know, quite often whenever he could.
Oh, yeah, that's true, remotely. Right? So you don't have your daughter. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me a little about StoryFuel. What exactly does your business do?
Yeah. So I would say we're very mission driven, impact driven. Like I said, we help marketers and creators tell better stories. And, you know, that's sort of a mission statement. But from a tactical perspective, what I'm really trying to do is take what I learned studying journalism and in the world of journalism and help teach those best practices to people who have had communications or marketing thrust upon them and maybe didn't get the same kind of training. So That comes in a lot of different forms, whether it's, you know, like I've talked about the workshops, masterminds, you know, we do coaching and things like that. But really, we're focused on teaching people those best practices of coming up with content ideas, optimizing your content. On an organizational side, it's maybe how to build a content team, like how to build a newsroom, you know, building content processes, strategy. We're really trying to, you know, take those things that work so well in the more editorial journalism world and give those same tools and best practices to the other side.
Okay. So this is just fascinating. So we're trying to build, we're tiny. We got six of us here, but we're trying to build a cohesive way of communicating, right? So we're not,
yeah.
So is that type of situations that you address?
Yeah, definitely. So it sounds like you're looking for more of a consistent, documented brand voice that can be used by all the members of your team in all the different places where you show up. Is that?
Sounds like you do this professionally. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the problem, and I'm sure you hear this all the time, is there's inconsistency in communication. We have disparate platforms where sometimes one we're focusing on more than another. There's inconsistencies on the same day, different messages. Yeah. What does an entrepreneur do to wrap their hands around that?
Yeah. I mean, so what we're talking about, I would call this like a brand voice audit. And we do this for especially a lot of startups and smaller teams. I think so often if it's just you, you kind of know your voice. And so you just use it in all these places. But the bigger your team gets, it becomes a lot harder to keep things consistent.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we would focus on an audit first and see what's working. So if you're in that position, that's what I would do is take some time, set it aside, look through each platform. All these places where your brand voice shows up and keep in mind that includes things like any automated emails that get sent out, the copy on your website. You know, if you have older blog posts that are still out there bringing people in, you know, all of those contribute to how you speak to your audience. So I would do an audit and see what's working for your audience based on engagement, you know, what's getting likes, shares, views, whatever that metric is. But then also ask what's working for you, because if the stuff that works really well for your audience, like makes you feel sick to your stomach and like a sellout, then like, that's not what you want to optimize for.
Yeah. Yeah.
You gotta find that sweet spot.
Yeah. Do you see businesses doing that they try to kowtow, I don't know if that's the right word, but kowtow to what they think the client wants, but it's incongruent with who they are?
I mean, I think we see it like there used to be I can't remember the account, and maybe you'll remember this. There was a Twitter account that was like brand, I think it was brands saying bay, like BAE before.
Yeah, or bay, right? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, okay, bay. So it was brands saying bay, and it was basically screenshots of brands doing cringy things, like using slang that just they should not be using.
Oh,
and
that's
like
so funny.
Jumping onto memes. And so like it definitely happens when you're like, we can hop onto this trend, so we're going to say that something is lit, you know, or
we're
going to use
a
hashtag that we don't fully understand and get it thrown back in our face in some way. So there's definitely some of that. I think the biggest challenge actually comes for personal brands, though, because I think big brands are always going to try to be a part of a trending conversation.
Yeah.
But I think for individuals, we're not taught to articulate, you know, our brand values or, you know, our voice, how we show up, how do we want to be perceived? We don't have a PR firm behind us or a communications team, like choosing all of our, how we show up in all these places. Right. And so I think that most often happens to individuals who don't have a clear sense of those things, who haven't taken time to do that, because what'll happen is they hop on Instagram and they see, oh, well, Gary Vaynerchuk is doing a lot of likes.
Gary V.
So yeah. So what we need to do is I'm just going to yell and use the F word a lot and like use black backgrounds of white text, because that does it. And it may get them sort of short-term engagement if they're, you know, hustling enough. Right.
Yeah.
But is that building the brand they want? Are they attracting the people they need? Are they setting themselves up for long-term success? Usually not. And so I think if you don't have that clear sense of who your brand is, even as an individual, it's really easy to get distracted by someone else's shiny object.
Oh, that's real. I heard people say, and I raised a red flag for me. People say, oh, I'm a chameleon. And I'm like, oh, here we go. And what they're saying is like, you know, I can play into the environment and fit in, but then I can be something else somewhere else.
I'm when
like,
I oh, hear so that.
Totally inauthentic.
And undifferentiated. Who's going to know who you are if you don't even know who you are, you know? Anne Handley, you know, fellow marketing speaker in the space, I've seen her use this quote, and I'm not sure that it's hers. Maybe she stole it from someone. I'll have to look it up so we can clarify. but she said something like, if your logo fell off, you know, would anyone know that it was yours? And that's a question that I think is really important to think about is, if someone saw one of your posts and the username wasn't displayed, it wasn't showing, would someone know that it was from you?
That's
is your voice
juicy.
There, right?
Yeah.
You know, if your infographic showed up and the bottom got cropped off and we can't see your logo, do we see your brand? Do we hear your voice? And I think you can even see that in something as simple as like a confirmation page, or what does the text of a button say on your website? You know, where are those places where you could show up and be you, even if the logo is not in frame? And so I think it's so easy when you don't have a clear sense of who you are to be somebody else, right? And so I think it happens most often with like personal brands, influencers, or like public figures who come into the spotlight really suddenly.
Yeah.
You know, someone who is like an everyday citizen who, I don't know, saves a baby falling from a building or something, and then suddenly
good
they're
example.
Like a meme. Right.
Yeah.
You know, they and then they're like, okay, I need to act like I have a PR agent and I've got a you know, post these certain types of photos and I've got to, I don't know, have a SoundCloud and start a podcast. And they just start doing what everyone's doing, you know?
Yeah. I guess if you feel like you have to versus I want to, there's already an indicator something wrong. What about, here's the thing, the cobbler's shoes, the cobbler's kids' shoes. How about your brand? Like, are you able to do what you do for your clients for yourself?
So this is a really good question.
Be honest. Don't.
I'm going to be maybe too honest. Maybe you'll regret asking this question. Who knows? I'm honest with my clients too. So I try my best to do as I preach, right? Yep. To do as I say to do.
Yeah.
But I'm also only a person and I do spend more of my time on my clients' stuff than on my own. So
you do all this stuff. So you don't have a team beyond yourself.
Yeah. We've got a couple folks who come in for special projects. Okay. Like I'm not a designer or an editor. So I'd bring somebody in if we had those kinds of needs. But the bulk of the strategy and direct consulting and the training right now is all me. So, you know, we've got systems set up. I've got an admin who helps run all this stuff. But you know, I don't personally have time to create YouTube videos every week, like I recommend some of my clients do. Yeah. If you go to my YouTube, you'll see I haven't added a video in almost 2 years, but I tell my clients that, and I explain why. I put my efforts into the places where I see the best returns, which is exactly what I want my clients to do. So you're not going to see me blogging every single day or posting YouTube videos all the time, because that hasn't historically generated returns for me. I spend a lot of time having podcast conversations, writing guest posts on other platforms, because that tends to bring me new audience. I am very active on Twitter because I have the biggest audience there. I spend a good amount of time on LinkedIn because I have a great network there. So
gotcha.
I'm practicing what I preach in that I'm making strategic choices about where to spend my time. And I do feel that my brand voice and my brand aesthetic is consistent across those places. But I'm often making specific recommendations for my clients that I myself am not following because it's right for them and maybe not right for me.
How do you avoid being that flash that you save the baby from the building, you die if you save the baby. Now you're on every news channel, you have your 15 minutes of fame, but how do you extend that to 16 minutes?
I think the biggest challenge is not having a clear goal or a clear sense of what you're saying, right? You know, if you're in that opportunity, you have like this opportunity that falls into your lap, you've got to be ready for that moment to have something worth saying and worth listening to, right? I think the biggest flash in the pan is when, you know, somebody gets, they do something magical or they have their 5 minutes of fame. And then every interview, they are saying the same thing over and over again. And so why should we keep listening? We've heard the story, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next thing that happens is they say the wrong thing because it's just, they're not prepared for the moment. I don't know what my business is you know, there's no plan of action. And so they maybe just start grasping at things. I think, you know, you look at the people who have turned opportunity into a long-term situation is the folks who had some sort of vision before it happened of, if I had an opportunity, here's what I would turn that into. And I know I'm a planner, so I always have that stuff thought out, but I think that's the best recommendation. And it's also important to think about positive and negative opportunity. You know, I'm not a crisis management expert, but I know there are a lot of people who were caught off guard with everything that was happening through COVID, the Black Lives Matter protests, you know, people who are unprepared for any sort of negative sentiment or negative response. And if you're not clear about what you stand for and who you are as a brand, then you're going to have a lot of trouble articulating that to people when the moment matters most.
You know, I'm thinking of the pandemic. I want to talk about Black Lives Matter too, but first the pandemic. So I get this email from Chevy, and I own a Chevy. The car's fine. The opening line, Melanie said, we are all in this together. And I'm like, oh, here we freaking go. You know, start selling me Chevy. It is the worst, most pandering line. We're all in this together. Why do businesses like Chevy and small brands do this too? We do something that we feel speaks to the community, but it really means we're being opportunistic and trying to placate and shift and manipulate.
I think there's a lot of marketers who feel pressure to say something because we're expected to say something. And this is, again, if you don't actually have anything of substance to say on this issue, you're going to end up saying the wrong thing, right? So many brands are getting caught in that we're in this together. And it's like, well, you're telling your customers you're in this together, but you spent all this money on a commercial instead of, but you laid people off. Or we're in this together, but, you know, you've closed all your locations. And so your customers can't even access the things that you're in together, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, just if you're not prepared, and I know you can't prepare for every eventuality, but have like a couple key buckets. You know, executive does something horrible and embarrassing, like, you know, public health crisis, natural disaster. Like, there's a few key things to think through. What do we stand for? How will we respond? And how can we message the way we're going to respond in those situations? Because that's when everyone fell into the trite together, but apart.
Oh, God.
We're all in this together. We stand with you. And it's like, none of those things mean anything. And
anything. It sounds like separate but equal. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if Chevy emailed and said, we weren't prepared for this. This actually knocked us back. We are shocked and we're scrambling, but we're going to serve as best we
can. Like, be human.
I know. It'd be like, oh my God, a company actually admits. All right. So let's talk about Black Lives Matter. So sometimes not saying anything is the best thing because you don't know what's going on. Black Lives Matter is a different situation.
That's right.
I responded after George Floyd was murdered. About 2 weeks after that is when I finally made a statement. And people were asking me, what's taking you so long? I really wanted to comprehend and prepare and understand my own ignorance, which is tremendous ignorance. But there was a certain point where I was at risk of being silent too long.
Yeah.
Tell me about the situation. How do we navigate in when to speak and when not to speak?
It's really hard to know. And I don't have like a one size fits all answer. But a lot of the advice that I have given to clients around this is, as soon as you have something to say, you should say it, you know? And I don't mean that in terms of like a rush and don't edit. But what I mean is, if you don't have anything to say, if you have nothing to express, you don't have a policy to point to, you don't have an opinion to share, then simply posting a hashtag is not going to help you. It's not really saying anything. Once you're clear on what you're going to say, what you stand for, what you are changing, you know, what you want to acknowledge, then you want to get that out there and share it. And so I think we saw both sides of that, right? We saw brands that took a very long time to say something, and people started to wonder, like, can't come up with anything yet. You know, it's been 3 weeks or something. But we also saw the brands who simply posted hashtag BLM and thought that was going to be enough for their multi-million dollar corporation.
Oh, and I think that's a fatal mistake, right?
You know, right. Because you're not really saying anything, you know? And so
it almost sounds like in that case, you're trying to say, you know, hey, we're done with this. Let's move on to selling.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of it comes down to authenticity. And if you're not familiar with Katie Martell, she talks about brand pandering. And so she's an expert on this topic, both in terms of you know, Pride Month and Black Lives Matter and a lot of these similar movements where when it lands poorly is when it's not authentic. People know you're just turning your logo rainbow or turning your profile photo black. That doesn't actually create change. That doesn't actually equally pay your employees. That doesn't actually root out, you know, bias or racism within your company culture. And so if there's actually action to back it up, I mean, which I think is true for humans in our relationships too. Like, as long as you're telling the truth, you're actually trying to do something, you know, you're actually making changes or acknowledging ignorance, then, you know, that's the best way to go. But people catch on really quick if those promises are empty. And that's the biggest, it's almost worse to say something and have there be backlash that proves you're lying or,
you're,
you know, where people say, oh yeah, really? Well, how come, you know, you fired this many people who are in this protected class, you know, like it's when it backfires on you because you're not being transparent. I think that's way worse as a brand than like holding your tongue until you figure out how to address it in an authentic way.
I was thinking like when these PPP loans came out, and the first story that I broke was Shake Shack gets $10 million, right? My response is, oh, the CFO, she's good. She did the right thing to get money, but the CMO should be fired tomorrow. The CMO is like, ah, who cares? Because now you have this mega corporation that's stealing from small business.
Yeah. It's a bad look.
Yeah. So it's a bad look, right? So I these decisions, there's sometimes a logical reason. Hey, they're going for money. You know, it's a capital market.
Aren't we all, right?
Great. But there's no consideration of the greater impact. That's interesting. So one other question I have about is you had a defining moment. I think it was back in 2014. Your father comes really ill. Thank God he survives.
Yeah.
But you discovered something about your business. I thought it was fascinating. Could you share a little about that?
Yeah. So this is what prompted me to start what is now Story Fuel. At the time, like I said, I was working at Time Incorporated, huge company, big team, a lot of projects. I had been there almost a year, and I found out my dad got really sick. I was in New York, he was in Connecticut, and my family, it was sort of a you need to come home ASAP situation. Mm-hmm. So went home. It wound up being several weeks that he was in the hospital undergoing procedures and things. And again, thankfully, he's fine. Like, we're very blessed. He's healthy. But it was rough for a few weeks there, you know, in and out of ICU and whatnot. And, you know, I had this, at first I felt this tremendous guilt of leaving my job, and I didn't like that. I didn't like that, you know, I knew my father was fighting for his life in the hospital, and I felt bad about missing a meeting. Like, that didn't sit right with me.
Yeah, you know? I get you though.
And then what I found is as soon as I got home, after about 4 or 5 days, once everyone had adjusted to the fact that, like, hey, I'm working remotely, this is an emergency, I'm not going to be in the office, the invites stopped coming, the calls stopped coming, and life was going on without me. And I think it was like after 2 or 3 weeks of that, I slowly realized, like, I'm bearing so much emotion for this job, and it has no bearing on the outcome. The team is fine. They're doing the work. The projects are getting done. My role seems to be largely the person who stresses about everything. Like, that's not healthy for me. It's not productive for the team. Clearly work is still getting done. And so I think I just sort of realized that it was no longer a fit for me through no fault of anyone, just that if they can survive several weeks without me being there and nothing has caught on fire, nothing has been forgotten, like, everything's fine. And if I don't miss it at all, then, like, something's not right. And so that was a good hint for me that I wasn't having the impact I wanted to. I really like that growth phase. You know, I had a number of shorter jobs a year or so before I started my own company. And it's because I thrive in that environment of teaching and setting up and connecting the dots and getting everything going. And I'm not as useful after that. Like, once I'm trying to teach people to fish, and once they can fish, you don't need someone there telling you how to fish anymore, you know?
Right, so
that was sort of the light bulb moment for me of, like, this is now the third time that I've hit this phase of I built a team and they're operating as they should be. And what now for me? And so that was really my big light bulb moment where I thought, I guess I need to maybe start my own thing where all I do is the teaching and the helping and the setting up and the starting, you know, and the problem solving and optimizing. I could always put myself in that situation where I do my best work. And like I said, thankfully, you know, my now husband, he was my boyfriend at the time, has a much more entrepreneurial spirit. They don't really teach that in journalism, or they didn't when I went to journalism school. So he was the one who said, well, start your own thing. And he had all these ideas that helped me see what those possibilities were. You know, I don't know that I ever would have looked at the whole wide world of jobs and opportunities and said, I'll start my own consulting and teaching, you know, organization where I can teach people. Yeah. I don't know that I could have had that idea without him sort of pointing me at that possibility.
It's amazing how sometimes these traumatic and life-changing events are truly life-changing. They change the trajectory for our lives.
Yeah.
Melanie, where can our listeners find out more about Story Fuel and what you're doing?
Well, you can learn all about Story Fuel at storyfuel.co. So it's .co, story, F-U-E-L. That's where you'll find the info about my book, The Content Fuel Framework, How to Generate Unlimited Story Ideas, and about our masterminds, the coaching, all that jazz, and all my links for social media if you want to find me wherever you like to spend your time.
Awesome. So everyone, check out Story Fuel right now. Melanie, thank you so much for sharing all these insights. I appreciate it.
Thanks for letting me share my story.
So, Amy, why don't you go first this time? What was your takeaway from the interview with Melanie?
I thought it was so smart with her sharing that if your logo fell off of your product, would people be able to recognize your product?
That was really good.
That was my big takeaway.
What was your big one, Kelsey? I said one with an underline.
Okay, so I really liked, and she said you need to take time in your calendar to just reflect. I think that's so important, like even on a daily basis. She said like quarterly, but I think for everybody, even just on like a daily basis, to kind of even emotionally kind of gauge where you're at and how are you making decisions. I should like that as my one.
Why did they emphasize one like that? That was kind of rude. Jay Blown.
I agree with Kelsey. Be mindful and take intentional time for reflection. I think that's really, really, really important just in general, because I think people don't take that time. And if they did, they would see things in a different perspective, or maybe, you know, come up with a different way to handle their emotions sometimes. And then also staying congruent with your audience, and don't try and be something that you're not, because people nowadays, obviously, it's very easy to see when you're not aligned with who you actually are and you're trying to be somebody else.
I like this for story. I think it's going to be a pretty common pathway for entrepreneurship during the pandemic and with all the turmoil and employment. Is, you know, she had that dream job with the New York Times, I think it was, right? So she got the dream job and then it goes away. She was thrust into entrepreneurship as opposed to aspiring to be, and has done very well on that transition. I think there's a lesson there for all of us. It's good, you know, sometimes it's thrust upon you. We want to know your tips too, our dear friends. So please rate us fairly and review us appropriately with whatever your thoughts are too. We'd love to hear them. All right, J-Bone, you got a question for us?
Yeah, I got a little gamey poo. So,
gamey poo.
Yeah. So she was coined in her bio as a lifelong storyteller. So I picked some quiz trivia from some famous love stories. Mm. So question one, what was the name of Helen of Troy's true love? Did you know it right away, Kelsey? Is that what you
mean? No.
No? Okay. So
I think I'm going to be very bad at this game.
Okay.
Yeah.
The options are London, Rome, Athens, or Paris.
I put Bob, by the way.
Yeah,
I know it was multiple choice. So her true love was clearly a city.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't going to just leave you hanging on that. I just, you know, yeah, make I love you sweat that. A little bit.
Or all her lovers were named after cities, which if her name's Helen of Troy, if you see how names work, Troy is a city. She has a propensity to date guys with city names.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm saying the psychology plays through and through.
Very good. Question number two. How many times was Elizabeth Taylor married to on and off soulmate Richard Burton? Was it once, twice,
three times
a lady?
Three times a Richard Burton lady. You know what I was reading about? Remember Zsa Gabor?
Zsa Gabor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, how many sisters did she have? Here's a question for you.
I only knew of the one that was also famous, wasn't it? Zsa and...
Yeah, there were three famous. So there was, I can't remember the other one. Magda is probably the one you're not thinking of. Magda Gabor, Zsa Gabor, and one more Gabor. Those three sisters were from Hungary or the Ukraine, something like that, came to the U.S. Their mother was like the socialite who made them famous. It is the what's the
Kardashians? Gender?
Kardashians, yeah. It's the Kardashian story verbatim.
Wow. Just
60 years back.
Ay, ay, ay.
Life repeats itself, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, verbatim. And the mom, the Gabor mom, she was married six times. It's like Kris Jenner. She was married like six times. It was unbelievable. There was no other similarities. There's no...
Also, Kris Jenner was not married six times, so...
How many times was she married? She's married to Kardashian, Jenner, three more times.
I think it's two.
No, I've been married twice.
Yeah.
Wait.
I don't buy
she hasn't gotten remarried after...
Do we have
Bruce Jenner?
No, oh, okay.
Is there anyone on retainer for libel for us, or do we have?
We do actually. We still have that.
Okay, all right.
That's we good. Do have that. We still have libel.
Okay, just check.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. I'm kidding. Okay, so this one could be a softball. I thought it was, but you know. So everyone knows the story of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. What was Juliet's last name? Was it Montague, Tybalt,
Capulet,
or Tybalt? Tebow.
Tebow, like Tim Tebow.
Yeah, sorry. Benvolio or Capulet?
I don't know which one belongs to which.
I know. I know the names.
I think these questions are great, Jeremy. I'm proud of you. You really turn up the heat.
Turn up the heat. With starting off with Helen of Troy.
All right, so who'd you guys pick?
I picked number
Paris.
One? I picked Rome.
Athens. I picked Paris.
It's Paris.
No way.
Yeah.
I vaguely remembered that. That was like bubbling in the back of my brain somewhere.
Look at that.
You study that in high school?
Yeah, I think I did. Or was
amazing,
it college?
Amazing.
I don't know. Yeah, that's 30 years ago. If I did remember it from high school, that's pretty dang impressive. That's all that's left.
Yeah, I even watched that movie too. That one movie. I'm sure there's a lot of movies about Helen of Troy.
Now, question number two. How many times was Elizabeth Taylor married to on and off soulmate Richard Burton? Once, twice, or
three? I said three.
Three. Triple.
Three. Twice. It was twice.
Damn.
Twice after the first marriage was.
Yeah, three. We're sticking with three, right, Mike?
Yep. Gosh, I got two wrong in a row. This game's stupid. Did I say
Did I say I was proud of you?
Yeah.
I take it back.
And finally, everyone knows the story of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. What was Juliet's last name? So was it Montague? Benvolio, Tebow, or Capulet?
Capulet.
I say Capulet.
I said Capulet too.
Yes, you're all correct. Congrats. Woo-hoo! You know Shakespeare.
Nice.
No, it's the only one that sounded right. I was going to go with Tebow, but I was like, nah, it's too.
I couldn't remember.
It was either Montague or Capulet.
Yeah.
I just didn't know which one belonged to who.
I thought it was Montague because I thought that Juliet Capulet just sounded too on the nose. Like, I didn't, you know, too literary or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I wonder if she, for a living, like filled capsules.
Oh my God.
I mean, if she had lived, she probably would.
Statistically,
yeah.
She probably would have.
She filled the capsule, her own capsule. And then, you know, took
it. Scientifically speaking, she probably was a capsule filler. All right, my friend. Jeremy, did you want me to say something else besides saying goodbye?
This is awkward. Whatever you want to say.
I thought you said you were going to add something to the script.
No, I mean,
no, we just have to pre-record it.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. My bad. That's awkward for our guests. All right, my dear listener friends. Well, there you have it. We have nothing else to share with you. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please give us a rating review and go to MikeMotorbike.com. Can you stop laughing, Amy? What, Amy, say, do you want to say something? Amy? Oh, spit it out. There's something. Spit it out. Oh, she's giving the fan off. All right, my friends. Please go to MikeMotorbike.com. Click on Get the Free Tools. We have tons of free resources to enhance your entrepreneurial journey. Take care, and I wish you good times.
Customers no longer base their loyalty solely on price or product. Instead, they stay loyal due to the experience they have, and their customer experience begins from the very first call they make to your business. Are you still using an answering machine? I hope not. Did you know that 85% of callers who only reach voicemail will hang up and call the next place on their list? Don't let that happen to you. Inbound phone calls are still critical to growing your business. Get help from Abby Connect. Abby Connect is no ordinary answering service. They assign your company a team and then train them on how your business works. They set up appointments and consultations. Also, they have a new mobile app that allows you to make calls and send texts from your business phone line. People prefer doing business with people, not machines. Abby Connect can start answering your calls today, improving your customer experience while saving you time and money. It's easy to get started. Get a 14-day free trial with no setup fees and no credit card needed by signing up at abbyconnect.com/MikeM. That's abbyconnect.com/MikeM or call 833-ABBY-WOW and say my name.